Early in the morning, Jesus came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and making her stand before all of them, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Now what do you say?" They said this to test him, so that they might bring some charge against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger in the ground. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And once again he bent down and wrote on the ground. When they heard it, they went away, one by one, beginning with the elders. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, sir." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go your way, and from now on, do not sin again." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
So I want us to start with the end of my sermon in mind today. I want us to hear the ending, and then we'll go back to the beginning and figure out how we're going to get there. So this is where we're going to end up. The gift of God is grace to our lives, and the gifts of God are free. And we need to hear this in the beginning, because to hear and to understand the points that we're going to hit, we have to view these stories through this lens. So let me say this one more time. The gift of God is grace to our lives, and the gifts of God are free. Now, all month long, we've been talking about these pillars of the Reformation theology, right? That we had Christ alone and faith alone. We had Scripture alone. And now here we are at grace alone. And a couple weeks back, you might remember that I shared with you my own kind of journey to figure out what it meant to live by faith alone, to give up trying to build my life off of the cornerstone of the law and to instead embrace the cornerstone of faith. But the story doesn't end there. Because as it turns out, just having faith does not make you a perfect person. And so as I continued to walk this life and try to figure out what I was supposed to be doing, I suddenly realized I had no idea what I was supposed to do with all these times when I still screwed up. In fact, I had grown up in faith. I can't really remember a time when I didn't believe that Jesus had died and had risen from the dead. And so how was I supposed to account for all these times when I knew that I wasn't living the way that God wanted me to live? But before we can really get into grace, we have to have that conviction. We have to have that understanding, and we have to spend some time talking about sin. Fortunately for us, our gospel lesson can help us do that today. So we have this woman caught in the act of adultery, dragged through the streets of Jerusalem, and brought before Jesus, who's teaching in the temple. And as the scribes and the Pharisees bring her to him, they really expect Jesus to do one of two things. Either he's going to condemn the woman and have her stoned, or he's going to let her go. In a sense, violating the law. And so then they have reason to bring a charge against Jesus, that he doesn't uphold the law. We can now, bring him before the courts. This is their plan. And so as Jesus looks at the scene that surrounds him, the woman, the crowd of bystanders, the scribes and the Pharisees, he kneels down and writes in the dirt. After a few moments, he stands up and just says to the crowd, "Let whoever is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And then kneels back and continues writing in the dirt. What was he writing? We have no idea. Why did he do this? We can only guess, right? It's a strange action. It's not something that we would see someone do on a regular basis. It's not something we would do on a regular basis. It's just, it's weird. But after his statement, as he kneels back to continue writing in the dirt, one by one, the crowd begins to disperse. One by one, they realize that they themselves have no room to play judge and jury over another person's sin. So that's the tricky thing about this thing that we call sin. It's not like standing in a courtroom in the United States where you have, you know, first-degree murder and second-degree murder and manslaughter, and these things involve different weights of punishment, and some are more severe than others. When we talk about sin, it's a level playing field. Sin is sin is sin. It doesn't matter if you're the 5-year-old who lies about spilling apple juice on his mom's new carpet, or if you're the adult who commits adultery. Sin is sin, because it all is a reflection of our choice to give up God's plan for our lives and go our own way. It doesn't make sense to us, right? Because we look at this and we say, no one's hurt by the 5-year-old lying about apple juice. And lots of people are hurt by murder or adultery or all the other horrible things that we can think of and identify that we would never do. But when God looks at this plane that we stand on, sin is sin. We have all chosen to live our own lives rather than to follow the path that God has for us. Paul reminds us in the letter to the Romans that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Mind you, it's not all have sinned and some are closer to God than others. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So the reality is that I, decent human being that I'm hoping to be in this world, am as guilty of sin as the worst murderer, adulterer, gang leader, drug dealer, money launderer that we can imagine. I am as guilty of sin as anyone else. Because we're all in this boat together. All have sinned and have fallen short of the glory of God. Now, I know this is kind of a downer for a morning, right? It's a dreary day. It's storming outside. We probably could have rolled over and gone back to bed. And now I came to church and this guy's just going to tell me that I'm a sinner and I'm no better than the murderer that's down the street, right? But we have to look at this story through that lens that we started with. We look at sin through the lens of grace. The gift of God is grace to our lives, and the gifts of God are free. Because we can't free ourselves from sin. We can't, by our own doing, make ourselves right with God. There is no work that we can do, no amount that we can pay, no distance we can travel to make ourselves right with God. We need something outside of ourselves. We need a gift. We need grace. And so grace is that thing that we talk about this morning, that we stand on grace alone, or solo gratia, as we would hear in our solas that we've been talking about all month long. And so as we think about this concept of living in grace alone, we need to make sure that we're all talking about the same grace, right? That we're defining grace together in one sense. Because you can talk about, oh, doesn't that person have such grace as they do this, that? That's not the grace we're talking about. We need to be clear on what we mean when we say that we need grace. So if we take a moment, we look at Paul's letter to Ephesians that we heard read today, right? And this verse that would become a cornerstone of Luther's movement, his theology, as he was writing about the teachings in the early Reformation. It says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not your own doing. It is the gift of God, not the result of works, so that no one may boast." So when we as the Lutheran Church talk about grace, this is what we're talking about. We're saying that all of us need to receive this gift. And grace is the fact that all of us have the same opportunity to receive this gift as anyone else. If I'm the 5-year-old who lies about spilling apple juice, if I'm the adult who commits adultery, if I'm the guy who has committed a murder, all of us have the same opportunity to receive this gift. This gift is given to all of us. Not by our own doing, not the result of works. It doesn't matter if we've been coming to church every Sunday for the last 60 years or if we're baptized moments before we die. No one can boast because this is a gift freely given by our Creator. This is grace. And so when we go back to our gospel lesson and we think about this story, and we remember this woman who was dragged out in the middle of this action, and as the crowd starts to disperse, realizing that they have no room to condemn her, it's just her and this strange guy that's kneeling and writing in the dirt. And he stands up. Jesus looks at the woman and says, "Does no one condemn you?" All she can say is, "No one, sir. Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, do not sin again." The one man in the crowd who could have picked up a stone to throw it at her. The one man who could have honestly answered, "I'm without sin, I can do this," offers this woman a gift. A gift that perhaps she didn't even deserve, but a gift. And you'll notice the story doesn't tell us how she receives the gift. The gospel author is unconcerned with her worthiness or her actions after the fact. The gospel is concerned with the offer of the gift and with Jesus' instruction for what to do with it. "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, do not sin again." The fact of the matter is, living in grace requires that we have an understanding of our own sinfulness. Luther would talk about this by saying that we have to be convicted by the law in order to experience the joy of the gospel, right? We have to know that we're sinful, that we're broken, that we need something outside of ourselves in order to appreciate the gift. And when we do this, when we walk this tightrope and find this balancing act between knowing our own brokenness and our sinfulness and realizing and seeing God's daily reminders of grace in our lives, when we find that balance, we begin to realize that living in grace is a lot like a dance. I've always been amazed by people who can dance with their partner and just know exactly what they're going to do. I don't know if you've ever witnessed this, but it's always been something that's been incredible to me. I want us to watch this couple for just a moment. This is a Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, if you're familiar with this. One of my grandfather's favorites. They're just so perfectly in step. Everything they do is just, it's precision. It's beautiful. They're not thinking about what they're doing. They're living this dance with one another. You can hear the precision of the taps, the turns, the twirls. Everything is just the way they want it to be. And if you've ever taken even a single ballroom dancing class, you know that this sort of accuracy and precision does not happen naturally. You don't just step on the floor the first time with a new partner and all of a sudden everything's perfect. You rehearse for hours and hours and days upon days and years upon years, dedicating your life to this craft, trying to understand every aspect of your partner so that you know every single touch and move and breath that they give exactly how to respond. All in the hopes that years later, you can finally have that moment when everything is going perfectly, when the dance is going just as you expect it to. And then, even then, when everything is going just the way we hope, this can still happen. We can still fall. We can fall back into our old addictions. We can fall back into our own sin. We can still fall. And yet God picks us up and continues the dance. That is grace. That opportunity to know, even when we fall, God continues to dance with us. God continues to give us this gift. God continues to say, this is my call for you. We will do this together. This is grace. This is the gift that we receive from outside of ourselves because we cannot do it on our own. The dance is not a solo act. It requires that we do this with God. So this morning, I invite you to dance with God, to experience the freedom of dancing with your Creator. We will not be perfect. We will make mistakes. We will fall flat on our backs in the middle of an international competition. But God will pick us up and we'll continue the dance. And as we do, we will become a better dance partner. Not because of anything that we do, not because of any skill that we bring, but because the gift of God is grace to our lives, and the gifts of God are free. God loves each of you, and I do too.